The train continued its course that evening without any problems, passing Fort Saunders, crossing Cheyenne Pass, and reaching Evans Pass. There, they reached the highest point of their journey at 8,092 feet above the level of the sea. Now the travellers only had to go down to the Atlantic through seemingly endless plains, flat as a quiet sea and no hill in sight. One track of this railway turns off southward to Denver, the capital of Colorado. The country around there is rich in gold and silver, and more than 50,000 inhabitants are already living there. 1,382 miles had been passed since they had set out from San Francisco, in 3 days and three nights. 4 days and nights more would probably bring them to New York. So Phileas Fogg was not as yet behind, he was still on schedule. During the night, they passed and left Camp Walbuck. The Lodgepole Creek ran parallel to the road, making the boundary between the territories of Wyoming and Colorado. They entered Nebraska at 11, passed near Sedgwick, and touched at Julesburg, the southern branch of the Platte River. It was here that the Union Pacific Railroad was officially opened on the 23rd of October, 1867, by the chief engineer, General Dodge. Two powerful locomotives carrying 9 cars of invited guests, among whom was Thomas C. Durant, vice president of the road, stopped at this point. Speeches were given, the Sioux and Pawnees performed an imitation Indian battle, fireworks were let off, and the first number of the railroad newspaper, The Railway Pioneer, was printed by a printing press that was brought on the train. And so the line was celebrated, a powerful instrument running through the desert. It would connect cities and towns that didn't even exist yet. Fort McPherson was left behind at 8 in the morning, and there were 357 miles to be travelled before reaching Omaha. At 9, the train stopped at the important town of North Platte, built between the two arms of the river, whose waters empty into the Missouri a little above Omaha. The 101st meridian was passed. Mr. Fogg and his partners had taken up their game of whist again. Fix had begun by winning several guineas, but over the past few games he had lost to Mr. Fogg, who was also as enthusiastic a whist player as Fix. During the morning, luck was on the latter gentleman's side. At one point, when Mr. Fogg had decided to play a spade, a voice behind him said,
"I should play a diamond."
Mr. Fogg, Auda, and Fix raised their heads and saw Colonel Proctor, who they had met in San Francisco.
"And who plays it?"
replied Phileas Fogg coolly.
"Well,"
replied Colonel Proctor,
"you obviously don't understand anything about whist."
"Perhaps I do, as well as another,"
said Phileas Fogg, standing up from his chair in anger.
"You have only to try, son of John Bull,"
replied the colonel. Order turned pale, and she held on to Mr. Fogg's arm and gently pulled him back. Fix got up, because he had had a fight with the colonel earlier, but Mr. Fogg stopped him.
"Mr. Fix,"
said Mr. Fogg,
"pardon me, but this affair is mine and mine only. The colonel has again insulted me. He insisted that I should not play a spade, and so we shall have a duel."
"When and where you will,"
replied the American.
"And with whatever weapon you choose."
Mr. Fogg tried to explain that he was in a hurry to get back to Europe and that he would come back in 6 months' time for the duel, but the colonel wanted it done immediately. So the colonel suggested to take the next station, Plum Creek, where the train would stop for 10 minutes. At 11 o'clock, the locomotive's whistle announced that they were arriving at Plum Creek Station. Mr. Fogg rose and, followed by Fix, went out upon the platform. Passepartout accompanied him, carrying a pair of revolvers. Order remained in the car, pale as death. The train stopped, but just as the two gentlemen were getting off the train, the conductor hurried up and shouted,
"You can't get off, gentlemen! We are 20 minutes late and we shall not stop for a second longer than we need to."
So they decided to duel in the longest car of the train while it was travelling down the line. The car was some 50 feet long and perfect for their needs. Never was a duel more easily arranged. Mr. Fogg and Colonel Proctor, each holding 2 6-barreled revolvers, entered the car. They were to begin firing at the first whistle of the locomotive. After an interval of 2 minutes, what remained of the 2 gentlemen would be taken from the car. While Passepartout was waiting for the whistle to sound, loud and aggressive cries were heard in the air, but they did not come from within the car. The screaming continued and cries of terror now came from the inside of the other cars. Colonel Proctor and Mr. Fogg, revolvers in hand, put their differences aside and saw that the train was attacked by a band of Sioux. 100 of them had jumped onto the steps without stopping the train. The Sioux were armed with guns, and since most passengers had revolvers, shots soon flew through the air. The Indians had first taken the locomotive. A Sioux chief, wishing to stop the train but not knowing how to work the machine, had turned a handle the wrong way, and the locomotive was now racing through the land. The Sioux had at the same time come into the cars, climbing like angry monkeys over the roofs, throwing open the doors and fighting hand to hand with the passengers. In the luggage car, they went through the suitcases and bags, throwing what they were done with out of the train. The travellers fought back bravely. They needed to put an end to the fight, which had lasted for 10 minutes, and which the Sioux would win unless the train was stopped. Fort Kearney Station, where there was a garrison with hundreds of soldiers, was only 2 miles away. But if they drove past it, the Sioux would be masters of the train between Fort Kearney and the station beyond. Fort Kearney was their only chance. The conductor was fighting beside Mr. Fogg when he was shot and fell. At the same moment he cried,
"Unless the train is stopped in 5 minutes, we are lost!"
"I shall stop it, monsieur,"
cried Passepartout.
"I will go."
Before Mr. Fogg had time to say a word, Passepartout had already left the car and climbed under it. While the fight continued, he made use of his old job as an acrobat and worked his way under the cars, holding on to the chains, moving from one car to another with incredible skill, and thus came to the front of the train. There, he loosened the safety chains, and as luck would have it, the connecting yoking bud jumped out as they hit a bump at high speed, and without the safety chain, the train was now separated from the locomotive. So while the locomotive raced on, the train gradually slowed down, and they stopped less than 100 feet from Kearney Station. The soldiers of the fort, who had heard the shots, hurried up. The Sioux had not expected them, and ran away before the train stopped entirely.